afternoon, everyone. My name is Sophia Kalamanidis. I am a partner with ENY. I am the regional capital markets leader and the regional IPO leader. I'd like to thank Nicole and Olga for inviting me to moderate this panel of ship owners. I have to share that this is my fifth time moderating for Capital Links Posidonia's conference, the ship owners panel. We've had really interesting conversations in the past, and I'm really looking forward to hearing your views today. Let me introduce our panelists, and I'll start off with Dr. John Custas, Chairman, President, and CEO of the NOS Corporation. We have Mr. Harry Vafias, Founder of Stealth Gas and Imperial Petroleum. We have Mr. Hing Chow, Executive Chairman of Wacom Maritime Transport Holdings. And we will have soon in our panel, Dr. Nicolas Sakos, Founder, Chairman, CEO of TEN Limited. And here he's coming.
It was hard to get to this panel with TV stars and everybody.
All right. We've had a really interesting morning, and I'm already picking up on a couple of themes. So we will use some of those themes in our questions for this panel also. The use of shipping has been has an important role with transporting goods, and it's a critical link in the supply chain across global trade. We've seen over 90% of transportation being made via ships, and in the past few decades, we've seen the volume of shipping has more than doubled. So the first question is to the entire panel. Can you share your views about the fundamentals of your specific sector and how the continuous growth can be maintained? And let's start off with John.
Thank you, Sophia. As you all know, in shipping, the most important thing is, as I said in the previous panel, the benefit comes for three things, which are disruption, disruption, disruption. And in the last few years, we had a lot of those, and especially regarding containers, it is a sector that has benefited economically quite a lot from COVID first, and then secondly now with the practical closure to container shipping of the Suez Canal. And
in Panama a little bit.
Yeah, Panama a little bit. Everyone, including ourselves, were predicting a dire 2024, which ended up to be a kind of another stellar year. And looking forward, really with no end in sight of what the situation in the Suez is going to be, this situation looks to continue, at least for the rest of 24. I don't know for how long into 2025. So the sector is doing well. Now, predictions are extremely difficult. We all know that geopolitical events are much more important to shipping than, let's say, fundamentals, which we look at the same kind of statistics, was going to be GDP growth, was going to be the various commodity growth. But in the end, other things are the ones that are sealing our fate. Thank you.
Nico?
Well, thank you. And I think the energy business is a little bit less disruptive than containers, at least for recently, which is an oxymoron because usually energy has been the most disruptive part of the shipping chain. However, nowadays, I think the good market that we are experiencing in the last couple of years is more supply-driven rather than demand-driven. Of course, exactly what John mentioned immensely help. There are people thinking that Greek shipping is financing the Houthis, which is not the case, as you know. Who has reduced by 60% the passage of the Red Sea. But I think in our situation, the uncertainty of what type of vessel, or at least what type of energy our vessels will be using going forward, is what is keeping our market positive with not that much supply right now.
Harry?
First of all, to congratulate Nikos and Olga for such a full house. We have two more floors full of people, so you need to book the whole hotel next time. It's going better, bigger and bigger. Well done for that. I think that, okay, we are basically in all segments except containers, so all these segments are at the moment doing really well due to a combination of positives and negatives. The negatives, unfortunately, are the wars in Ukraine and Gaza and the Red Sea Houthi situation. The positives are generally an overaged fleet and relatively small order book, which unfortunately is getting bigger and bigger recently, especially on the tanker side and in the bigger sizes of the LPG segments. Thank God the yards are getting fuller. So with all this money, people cannot get slots. So that's, I guess, a good thing. Only very forward deliveries. We are generally optimistic. If we, again, ourselves don't ruin the party as we normally do, because demand is there, and with all these events, geopolitical events that help shipping, we always try and ruin the party by over-ordering. I hope that at last we have learned our lesson. And I agree with the previous two speakers, and we should all work for a better and safer shipping as we move along.
And Hing?
For the sub-question, usually it's hard to be the last speaker because most of the intelligent points have been made by previous panelists. In this case, I would say shipping is still a relatively simple industry. Basic demand supply, as we all know, it's still fairly in the favor of ship owners and shipping industry. Unfortunately, there have been quite a few orders, both in dry bulk and in tankers. The big unknown is geopolitics. As we have seen in LNG, for example, the biggest growth factor globally, if we rewind our thoughts 3 years ago, was China, and then Ukraine happened, and then we saw a lot of European countries, including Greece, placing order for LNG. But what if this were to stop? Will we be in a situation where we have a significant oversupply of LNG? And this discussion now today extends into tankers as well as bulk carriers. And good thing is shipping is always more resilient. So despite a lot of countries talking about certain navigating around China, we see China plus one. And this, in effect, what has turned into is extending the supply chain, making global supply longer and more expensive, and unfortunately producing many more carbon. So whilst the world is looking very heavily and talking about decarbonization, in reality, politicians are generating more carbon through sanctions and making global trade much more convoluted than it needs to be.
Thank you, gentlemen. What I'm taking away from this question is that, you know, in the past, maybe global growth and geoeconomic progression was an issue to project how shipping will be performing, but now geopolitical topics which are not in the control and cannot be foreseen in a looking glass will make shipping maybe a little bit difficult to maintain. Let's go on to our next question. I know we're going to talk around green shipping. As I said, there's a common theme coming out from today's conference or forum. A few years back, when we were talking around green shipping, the conversation was around, should we be installing scrubbers? Or should we be switching to lower sulfur fuel? Today, the conversation, as we heard earlier in the panels, is around fuel efficiency and what will be the fuel of the future. So the next question is to, let's start off with Nico and then John, around what is your strategy towards greener shipping and what fuels are you going to be using for your new orders?
Well, I think the industry and the very, it's, we do not communicate this as well as we should, is one of the most environmental efficient and of course economic ways to transport huge quantities of cargo. So we have to start that this industry has really a small footprint in comparison with what it offers in the world economy. And I think we should not be defensive. We always try to make it even smaller. And we have proven this in the tanker industry. 30 years ago, we transformed the whole industry into the double-double design of ship. Most of us here, without any subsidies, a lot of owners just took that on their stride. And the same we're doing now. We're trying to have more efficient, build more efficient vessels, and at the same time invest heavily in and we're taking a risk in the future fuel. So the industry is in the forefront of environmental change, and I don't think that. I was very glad to also listen to the younger generation. You used to invite me on that panel some years ago, Nick. But okay. And well, my daughter now it's the next. So the industry, and I just want to let the younger generation know that the industry is actually one of the most efficient and environmental industries if you compare what the road industry is producing to transport to transport what we do by carrying 200,000 tons of oil or iron ore with such a small footprint. But we are there to do even better, and we are doing it. All of us here are taking huge risks in ordering ships in the hundreds of millions of dollars that we do not know if they're going to be actually allowed to trade 10 years down the road.
Unfortunately, when people are talking about the green transition, nobody is thinking about who's going to pay the bill. And unfortunately, everybody expects that, okay, we want greener ships, we want zero carbon ships, but everybody has to understand that, such a commitment requires huge, not just investment costs, but running costs as well. Liner companies, for example, which I am aware, they are unable to get any significant premium from their customers, who are supposedly the ones who are more environmentally sensitive. Some of them, yes, they may give them some preference over a small premium, but in any way, nothing really of a quantum that will justify any kind of green investment. So, on the other hand, apart from the issue of, let's say, who's going to pay for that, we do not have any solutions yet. The two, let's say, contenders of green fuels, which is e-methanol and ammonia. I mean, e-methanol, yes, it's something that it's feasible technically at this moment, but production is pretty expensive and it requires also carbon capture and things like that. When we go about ammonia, despite what people may hear, there is still no certification by any country of an ammonia-powered vessel. So this is still in the drawing board, and I'm not sure if and when we're going to arrive into something like that. I mean, the risks
to our crews from ammonia are huge. And I'm not talking about transporting ammonia, which is, of course, a well-known fact, but about operating an engine room with all the leakages, the requirements for maintenance of an ammonia-powered vessel. So the only thing really that we are left as an industry is to try to reduce the actual emission by ordering more efficient new vessels. That's the only thing that we can really do, and slow steam in parallel to reduce the actual CO2 per ton mile. In addition, of course, reduction of CO2 per ton mile is achieved by larger vessels. So we will definitely see a trend towards larger ships in the future. But practically, that's about it. So what we, at least ourselves, we are doing as a company, yes, we're ordering more efficient new vessels, which can be easily up to 30% more efficient than the previous ones, affecting retrofits on existing ships, and also try and invest in various optimization measures, which I'm pretty sure everyone knows. But there is nothing really magic we can do. We are not the ones who are producing the fuels, and we cannot be the ones that are doing the research in order to produce ships that are burning these alternative fuels.
We're not the engine makers.
Yeah.
Thank you, gentlemen. I mean, there is an added risk, and I think both of you highlighted that, you know, you're making investments, you're trying to bring in efficiencies, trying to use present technology to really build that into your new fleet. But there are certain unknowns, and those unknowns you're trying to hedge, but you're taking a risk going forward. Let's go on to our next question. We're going to stay on the concept of green shipping and sustainability. The next question is to Hing and Harry. Sustainability is becoming a key measure for a number of stakeholders. So lenders are providing better lending terms based on ESG performance. We see regulators are requiring ESG reporting for listed companies. And we also see investors actually looking at the ESG profile of a company when they're making a decision to invest. So this question is, how do you think sustainability reporting requirements will be affecting the shipping industry? And how are you preparing your company to actually manage these types of issues?
So we started voluntary reporting as of about 4 years ago. So even though Wagwan is a fully privately owned company, we do our own internal calculation in terms of carbon emissions for scope one and scope two for our ship owning part of our business. And we do part of scope three for executive and seafarers travel as well. At this moment in time, as our business growth is quite rapid, and as we are developing into a slightly more complex shipping company, we are formulating our own decarbonization and ESG strategy per business unit. So this will take time to deliver. At the same time, we are working quite closely with our suppliers, hopefully to get scope three in the future, because I think regulators in the not too distant future will be demanding scope three reporting, which is a lot more difficult. But I think on the other hand, you know, what's happening in Europe, EU ETS is forcing everyone to actually have your thumb on carbon emission per ship and for the entire fleet. So in this sense, you know, we are being driven by regulators to be more transparent and accountable. And in this sense, I don't think necessarily it's a bad thing. Something that we're also doing is we're working very closely with tech companies and classification society to transform our own management team into smart notated ship management, meaning that the data collection process will become automated, because I do think that the IMO mandated method of data carbon emission data collection, which is done through Noon Report, is rather antiquated. And if we can do everything more intelligently, and if shipping can be more intelligent, I think we will be doing this with less hassle.
Can I say something on the previous question?
Of course.
It's the first time that when we go to our committees on our classification societies, we don't have clear guidance on what we should do about the decarbonization and new fuels. In the past, when we had questions, we were going to our closest societies and we were asking the questions and we're getting very good and helpful guidance. This is the first time where they tell us, you know, these are the fuels. We don't recommend or we don't suggest any of those. You know, pick and choose and, you know, feel free to take your own risk, which is obviously very dangerous because, as Nico said, you might build a ship which might be obsolete 5 or 10 years later, a very expensive ship. And obviously, we don't want to be the first movers on untested technology. On another note, 4 years ago, I was asked by Tradewinds to give my view on green fuels, and I dared to say nuclear power, and a lot of people were laughing. And now, from what I read, all the classification societies are hiring nuclear power specialists. So my idea 4 years ago was not that crazy after all. From what we understand, is not going to work for the next 5 years or so, but within 8 or 10 years, it's maybe a very good possibility. And the other good news I heard was that these ships with nuclear reactors can actually burn the nuclear waste of nuclear power plants. So you also have an extra way to get rid of the really toxic and unwanted nuclear waste. So you see things that are crazy a few years ago suddenly are becoming very reasonable. Thank you.
Thank you. There are several, we talked around the uncertainties, the geopolitical, but I would like just maybe to get our panel, the entire panel, discussing this together. So there are various uncertainties, and we've seen it with respect to the elections in key countries that are taking place this year, the demand and growth in India and China. We talked around the conflict between Russia and the Ukraine, the Israel's war on Gaza, and the attacks in the Red Sea. So the question to our panel is, how are these uncertainties impacting the shipping industry? And can companies protect their operations and results when such uncertainties are not uncertain, are not happening, you know, at an ad hoc pace, but they're more certain each year to have something really derailing the global economy? Let's start off with Harry first.
As I said in my previous note, these uncertainties and these wars and these negative events actually are positive for shipping. Obviously, we don't like wars and we don't like people getting killed in Ukraine and Gaza, but unfortunately, these are positive for shipping. All these black swans that are might be very negative for the economy are actually positive for us. And that's why you see certain spikes, especially for energy shipping, gas and oil, and maybe containers as well due to the Red Sea blockage. How to protect ourselves is not an easy question. I guess if you are one of the few that dare to pass from the Red Sea, you need to have maybe armed guards. But obviously, with the missiles now that the Houthis are firing, the armed guards won't do much about that. We also saw that they are targeting U.S. and U.K. companies. Ships of US and UK companies. And we also saw that they are now targeting any ship that has been to Israel. So that's quite a big risk as well. But we see that the majority of the companies now avoid this route, this passage, which is again positive as it increases ton miles and reduces the availability of the ships. And of course, it also reduces the possibility of being attacked by these groups.
Okay, thank you. Nico, your views?
Well, I think this decade has started in the wrong foot. I mean, as soon as we were, I remember thinking 2019 would be gladly over and the 20s will be the roaring 20s, like 100 years ago. But as soon as we started, we had black swan after black swan. I think we're number 4 or 5 already. I mean, we had the COVID, the invasion in Russia, and more and more geopolitical events. And I think Hink will give us a little bit. That will be my question to you later. What is the future with Taiwan? Because, you know, this is very, very, you are closer to this part of the world. And we would like to hear that when you have the time for us also. So on the other hand, I always say that, because my mother used to be a doctor, a heart doctor, I always say that shipping is the artery of the world economy. So the less blockades we have, if in the long run, is better. Because if you have an artery blocked, it's not a very good sign. I know that we might enjoy short-term positive market conditions due to geopolitical turmoil, but open seas and open trade is what the shipping has been able to flourish on. That's my opinion.
Thank you, Nico. And maybe we can go to Hing, and maybe you can continue on what Nico is saying.
I don't think I'll answer on Taiwan. However, I think a very good point has been made. If you have multiple black swans, at what point do black swans become not black swans? And I think we're reaching that point in the world, unfortunately. I'm sorry for sounding like a pessimist, but I do think that there are structural factors in our new phase of globalization where the world has become multipolar rather than monopolar or dualpolar. And in this new world of having multiple centers, historical fissures that have been peppered over by economic growth will become cracks. And these cracks can lead to warfare and conflict. And I think, you know, we are at the beginning of this, unfortunately. So as far as shipping is concerned, I think in the short to medium term, any kind of disruption would be beneficial to shipping. But medium to long term, it's bad for everybody, including shipping. So my view on this is China, just touch on Taiwan very briefly, is very realistic. China also takes a very long view. We have had many centuries of dealing with Taiwan. Taiwan has been in and out of Chinese patrimony so long as Taiwan remains Chinese in culture. And if there is a relationship somehow, I don't think mainland China, the PRC, will be rushed into doing anything drastic. That's my view.
Thank you.
John, any other words?
I think I will agree also with Nico that the biggest danger of what we're seeing today for shipping is deglobalization. And all the protectionism that we hear around is the biggest long-term threat of our industry, which is really the one that has managed to bring the world closer and in this respect to integrate markets in a much better way and to have the world really feel and work as one. Now, to be honest, we hear around about, let's say, trade restrictions and the Americans buying less Chinese goods and all that. There is one thing that makes me an optimist, that in the Western world, and I'm talking about, let's say, mainly Europe and the US, we do not have the workforce to substitute for Chinese production. So no matter of whatever wishful thinking politicians may have,
I mean, we have both in Europe and the US record low unemployment. I mean, who is going, let's say, to produce what the Chinese are producing? So everybody in the US, for example, they are saying that, we want less foreigners. On the other hand, the US was built on immigration. And today, if you talk into the business world, everybody welcomes immigration because this is the only way for the West to be able to keep their workforce. So apart from all the other kind of geopolitical factors, we have reality which we cannot ignore. And in the end, it will have to be a world that will be to the benefit of the people, and the people are definitely better with global trade, which is reducing globally the cost of goods. And that was, and the really the advent of China was one of the most important factors that we managed to have record low inflation for, you know, for more than a decade. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. We're down to our last question, and this is going to be a really fun question because I actually raised it last time in Capital Link's 8th Leader Summit. So the question is, if you had $150 million, and I slightly changed it for inflation this year, what type of investments would you be making and why? And let's start off from Hing, and we can walk ourselves down.
Unfortunately, I'm going to come up with a very boring answer. I'm not going to put all the money into one pocket. It will be a spread between assets that will give me a good return, so probably second-hand tankers if there's a good opportunity, particularly with JV, probably doing more than one.
We'll talk after.
Second-hand, yes. And then probably also longer-term ships like LNG that Wagwan is already investing. I don't mind building a few more, which provide a more stable 15-year, 20-year yield. And then with a bit of leftover, I'll probably invest into future.
I love the answer of Hing. Very nice answer. Just to correct him, we have $150 million. If you buy these ships, there's not much left for LNG, but it's okay.
Cement equity.
Partnership.
Okay. To be honest, as everybody knows, the values and the prices are now very high for nearly everything. So you need to be very careful to what you invest in. I would personally look at dry, not because it has the best future, but because the values are not yet as high as tankers or gas or containers might be. So I would bet on dry.
Well, I think these are all very good ideas, but I would actually try to convince Mr. Kustas to sell me his beautiful yacht for this price.
Well, exactly. Prices are high. To me, the best investment today would be for someone to buy public shipping company shares. And I'm not saying specifically anyone's. All of them, they are undervalued.
Make ourselves great again. Yes. We'll buy red hats. Make us.
I think, John, kind of, we still have 4 minutes, and you just opened up one question that I thought we didn't have the time, but now I'm going to ask it. So it's around the diversification of sectors. Widely, you know, private companies do have a multiple of sectors. We saw that Wall Street likes companies that have one sector, but we saw public companies now multi-sectoring. So maybe if we can take a few minutes, and it's open to the floor. So if someone has an interest, we have 4 minutes remaining.
Sure.
Yeah.
I mean, it's finally time for shipping to embrace diversity, which is good. But we have been always criticized for being very diverse in the energy segment of our business. And I know all of us here are very focused on segments. I think both of my colleagues here are more focused on their side. We have been always criticized that we are too much work for analysts, because we operate anything from VLCCs to LNGs to shuttle tankers and to product carriers, but of course everything in the energy segment, and that has held, I would say, our share price back for quite a few years, regardless of our, I would say, good performance. In recent years, I agree with you that people are looking for more protection and diversity, and we have been able to see a small increase in our share price, and much more to come, as Yanni said.
From my experience being listed now for 20 years, we have seen that pure plays do command a premium, because shareholders and analysts and investors prefer to focus on one segment than having to analyze 3-4 different segments. So our oldest company is a pure play in the gas segment, but the two new ones, we prefer to play another tactic and be multi-sector, and we will wait to see the results of that.
For us, a challenge is how to be diverse and focused at the same time. So the way in which we have approached this is across dry bulk, tankers and gas carriers. We try to have focus within each sector, but we're quite diverse in the sectors we operate in. And another way for us to build resilience and diversity in the way we operate is having operational diversity. So besides being a ship owner, we're also a ship operator and as well as ship manager.
In the past, we also believed that being a pure play, let's say, has a greater advantage. It was advertised like that. Through time, to be honest, I have seen that there is, although I agree that it may be comprehended better by analysts, on the other hand, I don't think really that being a pure play is giving you any dramatic advantage. Companies are valued the same way, whether they are mixed play or not. It may take some time, let's say, for the markets to absorb and adjust. But to be honest, everyone has to do what believes is better for his company. And it's to do the same thing, whether it's private or public.
Thank you. And in summary, I just want to highlight three messages that I'm taking away from this panel today. Is around disruption is a new norm. Global trading needs shipping, and it's going to be transitioning. And there are risks in the new buildings, because the future of fuel is still something that is a hedge, right, as to how it's going to be going. Thank you. I thank our panel. I thank Nikos and Olga for allowing us to hear the views of our ship owners. Thank you.